local candidates debate as Joe Biden and Donald Trump barnstorm the state. Good morning. We are back this morning and live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, your election preview as we head into the campaign stretch run. A look at the state of all the races on your ballot. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, a conversation with Pulitzer Prize-winning author Daniel Yergin, The Future of Energy, in his book, The New Map. But first this hour, the latest on the corona pandemic in Florida. The state continues to report fewer cases of COVID each week than it did at the peak in July. That's good news. But at the same time, Florida still added 2,883 new cases of the virus in just the last 24 hours. The total number of people in this state who've reported a COVID case is above 741,000. And the death toll stands at 15,595, including 64 new deaths reported just yesterday. In our area, Fletcher High School at the beach has closed for the next several days because of this situation. Students will be all virtual for a little bit anyway, due to a cluster of COVID cases at Fletcher. So be advised of that. Meantime, President Trump is coming back to Florida again later today. It will be for a town hall appearance in Miami. We will be treated to dueling town halls on ABC and NBC television tonight. Tonight was supposed to be the second presidential debate, but the debate commission insisted on a virtual format after President Trump and a couple of dozen of folks in his circle tested positive for coronavirus. The president refused to do that. So at that point, Joe Biden agreed to a town hall on ABC, and now the president is countering that with a town hall on NBC. So that is the state of the presidential race, as both candidates have visited Florida in recent days and will continue to. Meanwhile, last night, candidates for local congressional seats met to debate. John Rutherford and Donna Deegan met in person at a televised debate, moderated by our news partner, Channel 4. Congressman Al Lawson and his challenger, Gary Adler, met virtually. That was a debate we moderated here at WJCT. So there's a lot to discuss, and we're always pleased to have A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics provide some insights. He's on the line right now. A.G., good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to have you on the show, and we're headed into the final stretch before Election Day, just 19 days. So everybody give us a call with your election thoughts and questions. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. AG, in a moment, we'll talk about the local races, because I know you've been writing about that. But first, I'd like your thoughts about, once again, Florida in the sights of both presidential campaigns. The president will hold a town hall in Miami tonight. Joe Biden has visited the state in the last week. The president held a rally in Sanford Monday that drew criticism because nobody, well, almost nobody was masked. And he is still or was still positive with COVID. So there's a lot to get into, but overlaying all of this is the coronavirus pandemic and how that's impacting the presidential contest. So let's begin with that. What are your thoughts about tonight's dueling town halls and the rallies we've seen here in the state?
Well, the president's campaign and the surrogates are pretending the coronavirus isn't still happening. It's as if it was declared over. That Sanford rally Monday night, they were flirting with fate. Governor DeSantis made news. He was on the undercard of the rally, and he walked up to the stage high-fiving people in the crowd. Then he wiped his nose, and it looked like he'd sneeze onto his hand. This isn't great hygiene in normal times, much less during pandemic times. President Trump, he has a clean bill of health for his doctors. People can take that seriously if they want, but he's had the best medical care in the world, so we can maybe give him the benefit of the doubt. But the people at those rallies do not have access to Walter Reed, to 12 doctors, to suites. You know, they're going to have more rudimentary setups, and it's a little bit different. So they're betting on people pretending the pandemic isn't happening, and they have to play Florida really hard because, you know, Florida is one of the few options left in terms of battleground states that, you know, they may have a spitting chance in. You know, the upper Midwest seems out of reach. Other places they could count on before, not so much. So you're seeing a lot of Florida, but Biden is still outspending the campaign. I mean, Biden, the campaign is awash in money. $250,000 spent on this race, and Biden spent roughly 60% of it. And I don't think that includes the Bloomberg money that's coming either. Michael Bloomberg spending $100 million against Donald Trump here. So Trump's got to be here because he's not on TV as much as Biden.
It's 549-2937 to join us. Now, all of that said, AG, just this morning, Biden's campaign manager tweeted out that despite polls showing Biden ahead of Trump by double digits, she believes that in the end, this race will be very close. Let's talk about that. We are seeing a lot of early voting, and those numbers favor Democrats. What we expect a lot of Republicans to turn out, likely on Election Day, in this state and others.
Right. And here's the thing with the polls. The public polls are generally going to skew Democratic. I mean, that's historically the way it is in the state. And there's a variety of reasons why, from oversampling of Democrats to Republican voters, and specifically voting for candidates like Trump, being less reluctant to cooperate with pollsters, you know, part of the fake news and all of that. You know, that being said, this isn't 2016. 2016, Donald Trump was blessed with a historically unpopular candidate, somebody who really rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, seemed like the embodiment of neoliberalism to some, played into gender stereotypes with others. So, and Trump was an unknown quantity then. 4 years later, we've got an economy that's on its back. We've got a coronavirus that has not been tamped down. And, you know, Joe Biden is, you know, basically the generic vanilla ice cream candidate. And they're spending a lot of money selling vanilla ice cream. And it seems to be working in a way that it didn't in 2016, especially regarding swing voters. Can Trump turn out unlikely voters? That's the question. I mean, his campaign says that a lot of Democrats and NPAs and people who hadn't voted before are going to these rallies. Time will tell on that. That's internal disseminated information. You got to take that with a grain of salt.
And let's talk about the pandemic and how it dominated discussion at last night's televised debate. It was between Congressman John Rutherford from Congressional District 4, the Republican incumbent, and his challenger, Donna Deegan, former news anchor and creator of the Donna Foundation for Breast Cancer. This was hosted by our partner News for Jax in partnership with JU. The 4th Congressional District covers Nassau County, parts of Duval and St. John's counties. It was striking to watch Rutherford, a former sheriff, well-known name in the community, against another well-known name, Donna Deegan. As I mentioned, we've watched her on television for many years. She's a breast cancer survivor, creator of the Donna Marathon, and they didn't see eye to eye on anything. Beginning with the president's response to the pandemic, here's Deegan.
Well, I think I would do just about everything differently. First of all, I would not have fired the pandemic team before we ever had a pandemic in the first place. When the president first found out about how serious this was back in January, he should have been straight with the American people and told them just how difficult this was going to be, that it was going to be deadly, that it was going to be hard.
Okay, Rutherford responded by saying he believed the president acted quickly and pointed to the China travel restrictions the president implemented.
Yeah.
Let's listen to John Rutherford quickly.
Okay. The actual impact of this pandemic was not known at that time. We didn't know a lot about how badly this was going to go. And so we locked down the greatest economy that, you know, this country's ever seen.
And we'll go to your calls in a moment. Did you watch that debate last night? Give us a call, 549-2937. AG Gankarski, Congressman Rutherford also said he's working with House leadership to pass an additional relief bill because of the recession that's been brought on by this pandemic. And so the pandemic dominated the debate discussion, although that wasn't the only thing these candidates locked horns over.
Yeah, and really the pandemic and healthcare and the threats to the Affordable Care Act. I mean, that's the anchor of Deegan's campaign pitch when it comes down to it. You know, Deegan has, you know, healthcare credentials that are unique to her because of her history of surviving cancer and, you know, the activism, you know, to find a cure and remedies for breast cancer. You know, and that's something where Rutherford, I mean, you can take him at his word or not that, you know, maybe Barrett doesn't want to overturn the Affordable Care Act. Amy Coney Barrett, Supreme Court nominee, likely be confirmed later this month. You can take him at his word or not that he's willing to protect pre-existing conditions. But Rutherford is on record saying that he wants to repeal and replace Obamacare. He did it right here in Jacksonville in 2017, standing by Lenny Curry and Vice President Mike Pence. I know because I was there. It killed a Saturday for me. So,
and you've lost a lot of Saturdays covering these all kinds of candidates and forums, we should point out.
I am aging in dog years, Melissa. But
I bet you are.
But, you know, that's the thing, though. I mean, Rutherford has not really, he hasn't successfully walked that back because either you want to repeal and replace or you don't. And there's no Republican plan that is viable at this point. You know, so it's really one of these things. It's like the discussions people had in previous eras about Social Security and Medicare. We're at that point with the Affordable Care Act, and Republicans have been negligent in actually coming up with a free market alternative the way they said they were going to in 2016 and cycles before in 2018 also.
Okay, let's talk about that in the context of this particular race, Congressional District 4, like all the districts in Florida and most of the districts in America, is heavily gerrymandered. And by that, I mean it is drawn to favor Republicans. Any Democrat running in this district is going to have a hard time because there are so many registered Republicans in the district. And there are a number of MPAs, as you've reported, AG, but they tend to lean Republican, although that could change this cycle. Last night, we saw Deegan talk a lot about health care as a breast cancer survivor and hammer Rutherford on this issue of pre-existing conditions, which are widely popular with bipartisan majorities wanting to keep health insurance protections for pre-existing conditions. But all of that said, political reality, partisanship, and tribalism is what it is. It's going to be very difficult for candidates in districts that are drawn a certain way to break through. And that goes both ways. Republicans that run in heavily Democratic districts also struggle. So I guess my question to you is, If we do see a strong night for the Democrats on election night, let's assume if the polls are right for a minute and Joe Biden wins the election, does that blue wave carry, how far down ballot does that blue wave go in Florida? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know if it goes to an R plus 20 district, even with a strong candidate. That's the reality. It's 48% Republican, 28% Democrat, and, you know, NPAs are to balance. You know, the UNF poll said Deegan was splitting the NPAs with Rutherford. My suspicion is she's going to do a little bit stronger than that in the end with NPAs. But, you know, the reality is it's a Republican district. It's a white fight kind of district. You got Nocatee. You've got these new construction places in Nassau County. People, by and large, moving away from the issues of Duval County. And, you know, as you got into that second part of the debate where it got to Black Lives Matter and discussions of Marxism and socialism and defund the police and all of these things, Deegan had to dance around those answers because there's a large swath of Democratic Party that is more to the left than she is on them. And that's the balancing act of a Joe Biden Democrat, and I think that's what Deegan is running as this time. You know, somebody, you know, positing sensible neoliberal restoration kind of solutions to the world's problems. But when you're in that box, you can't really move very far. So, I mean, she was able to say that she didn't, you know, she supported Black Lives Matter. She didn't want to defund the police and so forth. But it's something where she gave enough sound that if, You know, it's close. You know, Rutherford can do a contrast to that using something making her sound more extreme than she is. Because all it takes is 2 or 3 seconds of sound, and you can manipulate it. We see it in ads time and again.
Yeah. Let's talk about, of course, TV ads take fundraising. And you write quite a bit about candidates' ability to fundraise.
Yes.
Let's talk about this race in that context, because Deegan has been a hefty fundraiser, and so has Congressman Rutherford. A lot of money is being spent on this race.
Yes, and Deegan has outperformed Rutherford 3 out of the 4 last quarters. You know, Rutherford came into the campaign with a war chest from 2 previous campaigns, rated nominal competition. So, you know, Rutherford had the overall advantage in terms of money, you know, just because of those resources. But Deegan outperformed them as a fundraiser. And that was without any real help from the National Democratic Party. They have featured her, the Biden campaign has featured her as a surrogate on a couple of calls. But this has been grassroots. This has been local. This has been people who want Donna Deegan. And that's why I say whatever happens on election night, she's a winner, because she has proven that she has political viability for whatever she wants to do next.
Let's go to some calls now. We're talking about your election ballot, both local and national races, 19 days away from November 3rd, 549-2937. Mark in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, good morning. I just want to make a comment about the prior conditions issue. And my understanding is, and I'm not minimizing it, but I'm putting it into context, and that is, the issue about that only really pertains to individuals who are purchasing individual plans. If you go to Medicare, even prior to the ACA, Medicare approved. They didn't have restrictions on prior conditions, as well as employer-based commercial plans. They did not either. I mean, how many people have said, man, I want to get a job with a good company so I can have good benefits? They didn't have the prior condition issue. So although I understand the importance of it, and I'm in favor of ensuring that patients with prior conditions can get coverage, when you look at the number of people it impacts, I think it's much smaller than many people think that it is, because we tend to lump everybody together with prior conditions, and we scare people like Medicare recipients thinking, well, I have cancer, I'm not going to be able to get coverage next year if they roll this back.
Mark, thanks. I appreciate your insight on that. That said, AG, probably the most popular piece of the Affordable Care Act is that you cannot be denied coverage because of a pre-existing condition. That was the big push toward passing this legislation, because millions of Americans did have that experience. They did struggle to have affordable insurance because of this or that condition. I don't mean to minimize Mark's call, but that was a real issue.
Yeah, it was a real issue. It is a real issue. And I mean, healthcare in this country is a joke compared to the rest of the first world. And I think that's the larger issue. You know, that's something that Deegan brought up. She says she does not support Medicare for all, but she does support a public option. And a lot of Democrats wonder why the Obama administration stopped short when they had the leverage to push that through. The compromise that was reached did not serve Barack Obama well politically in the end, did not serve the Democratic Party well in the end.
And wasn't the compromise really because they wanted to work with the insurance companies? They were trying to bring the insurance companies on board.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that's the corporatism that, you know, have served the Democrats well in, you know, 2016 and 2022. I mean, when you look at Hillary Clinton, when you look at Joe Biden, whatever populist rhetoric you may hear from them, you know that there's a wink and a nod to Fortune 500 companies, and that the top 1% are going to get their leg up. And that definitely includes insurance companies. And, I mean, President Trump has made a lot of comments about, you know, fighting the insurance companies and drug companies and this and that and the other. And that's what he's referring to.
549-2937. Give us a call. Rick is in Ponte Vedra Beach. Good morning, Rick.
Hello. I did not hear the debate, but I had an opportunity to hear John Rutherford at a local medical conference. And there he had claimed that the coronavirus was created in a Wuhan lab to destroy our economy And I thought we were beyond this. Wait a minute.
You're saying he said that?
Yes, he did. There were questions from the audience that I think probably prompted that, because someone in the audience claimed that the numbers of deaths were a hoax and that socialists were paying families to be quiet, that the number of deaths weren't there. It was crazy.
I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. You're saying that Congressman Rutherford agreed with the conspiracy theory that the coronavirus was created intentionally in a lab in Wuhan, China, to destroy the American economy. Is that really what you're saying?
Yes. That is what he had said at the conference.
Okay. There's no proof of that. We need to be clear. At the same time, I can't verify that what you're telling us is true. But I want to thank you for the call, Rick. That's Rick in Ponte Vedra. AG, returning to the virus and the perceptions that many voters out there have about China and whether or not it is trying to harm Americans, that did come up in the debate last night in a more oblique way, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it did. I don't think it's an issue that really hit or is really going to resonate in this race in any meaningful way. But, you know, the China virus meme is obviously something that Republicans from the president on down, you know, have used. And there's very little daylight in any meaningful way between Rutherford and Donald Trump.
Marion on the South Side. Hi, Marion. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. And I'm going to take you off speakerphone.
Yes, please talk right into your phone. Go ahead, okay. Marion, you're on the air.
Thank you. My statement about the debate last night was I was appalled at John Rutherford's denial of the state of the implications of having implicit bias in everyone that causes them to react in racial or systemic ways to demean or to assume behaviors in other people. It's an innate process. And it's the administrator's position that there is no harm being done by anybody, particularly the police, but by anybody in terms of how we treat one another, and that we treat some people differently than others, that there is no racism, or if there is a racism, that it's a problem that can't be solved by anybody learning anything differently than what they already know.
So all right, Marion, thank you.
Training and like that.
Thank you, Marion. And the topic of implicit bias, criminal justice reform, and Black Lives Matter, that came up last night, AG, and it was striking how far apart these candidates were on these issues. And, of course, with the context that Congressman Rutherford is the former sheriff of Duval County, how did you interpret those exchanges between the two of them?
Well, yeah, you know, they each play the type. I mean, Rutherford's got nothing to gain by giving any quarter to Black Lives Matter, and he talked about the difference between somebody wearing a T-shirt and the quote-unquote Marxist organization. You know, he spent some debate time on a couple of leaders of the organization that probably a handful of viewers actually knew the names of. So, you know, that line of attack was something that he was invested in personally. You know, I think for Deegan, I mean, you know, Deegan takes the opposite position, that the sentiment of Black Lives Matter and the critique of aggressive policing, including especially the way that the John Rutherford, Angela Cory era in the city progressed, where you saw a lot of police shootings, you saw a lot of exonerations and a disproportionate overall impact of law enforcement on young Black males. So these are real issues, but the voters in St. John's County, the voters in Nassau County, and the voters in the gated communities, how much do they really care? I mean, that's the question.
One thing we love about this show is it does air across the entire listening area, and people call in sometimes unprompted that are listening in. That includes the candidate we've been talking about, one of them. Donna Deegan is on the line. Donna, good morning.
Good
morning.
Good morning, Melissa. I'm enjoying listening to you. I just wanted to jump in, you know, with a quick comment about your discussion about the district. I understand what AG is saying. As you know, I got into this race with my eyes wide open in terms of what the district looks like. But I have held town hall meetings all over this district for the entirety of this campaign, and I am getting a great deal of input from people all over the political spectrum who tell me that they're tired of exactly what you saw last night. Now, that poll that was taken that had me down 19 was taken right at the beginning of when we started to get our ads on the air. We have now been up on the air for a few weeks, and we continue to bring our message out there. So I guess I would say that this is before we started to see the big slide from the president in the polls as well. Don't count me out, AG. I'm already hearing you talk about races in the future, and it bugs me because it's depressing. So stop doing that. Let's see what happens on election day, and then we'll talk about the future, okay?
Well, sure thing.
All right. Now that I've got you on the air, as I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, we did hold a forum here last night, a virtual one, with Congressman Al Lawson and his challenger, Gary Adler. We had hoped to do a forum with the League of Women Voters of Jax for your race, too, Donna, between you and Congressman Rutherford. That didn't happen. And that's too bad. I would have appreciated the chance to moderate that. I felt that Kent Justice at Channel 4 did a great job last night with the televised debate between the both of you. But now that I've got you on the air, let's talk a little bit about some of the issues that came up last night, beginning with the pandemic. AG and I have been discussing how far apart you and your opponent are on pandemic response. If you were elected to represent Congressional District 4 in Congress, what would be your biggest priority? You would be voting with the Democrats on pandemic relief and stimulus. What would be your biggest priority for the residents of this district that are dealing with the effects of the pandemic?
Well, again, Melissa, you know, you have to get the virus under control. I mean, I hate to keep coming back to that, but this is going to be a repeating problem as long as we have super spreader events and people in office that are modeling poor behavior. So no matter what we do legislatively, unless we get the virus under control, and it is still way not under control. I think that's really obvious. We've closed down Fletcher High School now. Florida's had to postpone their game. I mean, we are not anywhere near under control with this virus. But what I would do, obviously, is I would make sure that while we ask people to mask and do all those things that we need to do, that we're sending meaningful support to families and to small businesses and to state governments and local governments who are really starting to bleed those workers that are essential because they don't have the budget because we haven't handled the virus. That's what we're not doing. What Congressman Rutherford wants to do is send more money to big corporations, and I just don't think that is the way that we need to go right now. I mean, I'm not saying they don't need money too, but it's those everyday mom and pops that are really hurting.
Now, you said you've heard from people across the district of all political backgrounds. That said, as AG's been pointing out, it's a heavily Republican district. What's your message to Republicans who just don't like the Democratic Party? They don't agree with the values of the Democratic Party, and they're just not inclined to switch, to cross over at this time. There's just a sharp ideological divide between the parties, and I'm just wondering what you're saying to voters who don't agree with you.
Well, here's what I've said. I've asked them, I've told them how I feel about the issues, and I've asked them if we agree on those things. You know, so what I'm asking people to do is look beyond the party labels, and that's what I said last night. We used to be that community that didn't care so much if you had an R or a D next to your name. Now we're in a situation where we are so politically polarized, but people are seeing the chaos and the dysfunction. And frankly, what I've heard, especially from a lot of moderate Republican women, is we're scared. We feel like we're on the precipice of a lot of bad things if we don't do something different. So what I've said to people is, look, I spent the majority of my life as an NPA. That's really where I'm still the most comfortable, to be perfectly honest. And I like talking to people from all sides and finding solutions. You're not going to get all of what you want. I'm not going to get all of what I want. But at the end of the day, we've got to come together to find solutions for the American people. And right now, all we're doing is parroting a bunch of talking points on either side of the aisle that's getting nobody in. anywhere.
Do you believe if Amy Coney Barrett is confirmed to the Supreme Court that the court will overturn not only the Affordable Care Act, but also Roe versus Wade? And are women in the district coming to you with concerns about those issues?
Absolutely they are. And women that might surprise you. I think they're, look, you know, here's the deal. All we can do is go by what she has said in the past and what this president has said. The president has clearly said that he would not appoint anybody to the Supreme Court that wouldn't overturn the Affordable Care Act and wouldn't overturn Roe versus Wade. Amy Coney Barrett has definitely made comments about both of those things. So I think that's all we really have to go on. Certainly she's not going to say that, but I think that it is not hyperbole to say that we are very much at risk of losing those things.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking politics on the show with A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics. As we were discussing the debate last night between Congressman John Rutherford and his challenger, Donna Deegan, Donna called in. So it's your chance to connect with the candidate right now. If the congressman's listening, you are welcome to call in too, sir. 549-2937. Give us a call. Steve is in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I'm so happy Donna called in to point out that the UNF poll was taken right when they were beginning to put ads on TV, the Deegan campaign. And AG always has something to say that I'm not sure is ever really totally correct, but he, I remember 3 weeks ago,
What do you mean by that?
Well, 3 weeks ago, he said, Joe Biden is losing this election in your roundtable. He also made a comment about Fletcher Jr. closing, the principal at Fletcher Jr. closing the school at Fletcher Jr. and called it hand-wringing. So as you can tell, I'm not a big fan, but at the same time, he should know when that poll was taken and what that means in terms of the NPAs and the Deegan campaign polling. So I'm glad that Donna called in and cleared up that that poll was taken. I sort of surmised it weeks ago when her campaign was just getting on TV. I think if you're at a poll today, it would be much different.
Okay, Steve.
After that debate.
Thank you, Steve. AG, what about that? And what about the high number of MPAs in the district and whether or not they are malleable?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. But the poll was taken the first few days of October. So it hasn't been a matter of weeks so much as days. But, you know, that being said, I mean, the TV could make a difference. I mean, you know, I think there is a path where this margin is closer. I don't see a path in that district, you know, for a Democrat to win an R+20 seat without a serious scandal on the incumbent. And Rutherford has not been a scandal-driven incumbent. He's been a pretty generic incumbent. Regarding what's happened in the presidential race in the last 3 weeks, it's pretty simple. The president got COVID, and he continued the campaign. I think that was a risky play. It might have been the play that he felt he had to make because he's getting outspent. But that's the play that was made. You know, races do flip. So I think that's what was in play there. And I think if the president had figured out a way to handle the COVID messaging better during the stretch run, rather than saying that he's immune and healed because of some super treatment that nobody else has access to, then this might be a different dynamic.
Donna, we are 19 days away from November 3rd. Hundreds of thousands of Florida residents have already voted, and early voting starts Monday. As AG said, this campaign is heading into the final stretch. How will your campaign handle these final days?
I'll just continue to press on health care, Melissa, because I hope it was abundantly clear last night, and I try to keep coming back to it because it is personal to me that someone would both in his campaign and then again on the debate stage continue to say that he has a viable solution for people with pre-existing conditions. It's just not true. And the fact is, people need to understand that. I mean, we have a lot of vulnerable folks and 7 million plus more people who now have another pre-existing condition on top of the one they already had. This is a big deal. It's not just about healthcare. It's about transparency. It's about accountability. It's about telling people the truth. And that's what I will continue to do for the rest of this campaign, and hope that it will resonate with people who are seeing more and more that they're just not getting that same level of transparency from this campaign. And frankly, that people would like to return to a less fear-driven conversation when it comes to our politics.
Lots of calls. Let's try to get in a few more of you. If you're just tuning in, we booked A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics this morning to discuss local and national races that will be on your November 3rd ballot. In the middle of the discussion, Donna Deegan decided to call in. So if you want to connect with this candidate, now is your chance. Tricia in Riverside. Tricia, go ahead.
Hi, Melissa, and hi, Donna. I just wanted to tell you, Donna, you were a spectacular communicator last night. And I absolutely loved your closing comment when you said, God didn't keep me here to serve a party. He kept me here to work for you. And I just think you need to use that as a TV ad again and again and again. It was just beautiful.
Thanks for that, Donna. Most people know your story, but you are a three-time breast cancer survivor, and it's my understanding that that's why you decided to run for office, because of your experience with your illness and with the healthcare system. Is that right?
That's right. Melissa, you know, I for the last 20 years have been hearing from women who are choosing food or medicine. I'm hearing from people that haven't gone to get diagnosed until they're stage four because they didn't want to bankrupt their families. I mean, it is so personal to me that we actually find a viable solution to this. And as I've said many times and said when I kicked off this campaign, you know, I do believe it's by God's grace that I'm still here. And I think that makes me responsible to make sure that those who are here after me have a better path than a lot of people have right now. I don't believe I've been left here to twiddle my thumbs or to just have a fun, easy, path for the rest of my life. I think it is something that is required of those of us who are fortunate enough to survive to try to do something with that. And that's really all I was trying to communicate last night.
We're getting lots of comments on social media, on Facebook. Lisa writes, the difference between the candidates on TV last night was striking. Congressman Rutherford appears to be living in a time warp, locked in the past. He recited tired party tropes. Deegan was well-informed, current, sharp, and has obviously spent a lot of time talking to people in the district, she says. Lots of tweets coming into the show about the Congressional District 4 race. Betsy writes, I work in Ortega at a private club. Deegan for Congress signs way outnumber Rutherford ones in that area, she says. But it could be part of the gerrymandering we see in Duval County. All right, let's take one more call. It's Jessica in San Marco. Jessica, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to let Ms. Deegan know that I was thrilled when I heard she was getting into this race. Her work has a history of bringing people together and getting actionable, real, specific results that make a difference. Her foundation actually, you know, helps provide for survivors of breast cancer. It's not just about, you know, some wishy-washy raising awareness. She's funded research on a groundbreaking vaccine for triple-negative breast cancer genetic markers, which is extremely difficult to find therapy for. My family members suffer from that, so that meant a lot to me. I'm just absolutely thrilled that someone with those kinds of results is actually stepping into the political arena, and I think anybody who looks at her and her work compared to Rutherford, who presided over a huge rise in local crime, violent crime, and police shootings, I don't know how anybody could see that there's even a choice here.
Jessica, thanks. Donna Deegan, I want to stress, we did not book Donna this morning. We didn't expect this call, but whenever a candidate calls in, we will certainly give them some time to talk, and that is certainly true of the congressman. Donna, could you respond to that?
Melissa, I think all I heard was her comment about the research and the help for folks in the foundation. Is that what I'm responding to?
We're coming up against a break, but I just want to thank you for calling in.
Thank you. I appreciate her words. Yeah, obviously the foundation has done a lot of great work, and I hope that this will be the next step in my service to the community.
Thank you for that.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. And AG, your final thoughts.
I think Deegan
makes it closer than 20 points in that race, and I'm curious to see how much she outperforms Biden by. That's something I'm watching.
Okay, and as you mentioned, when candidates go up on television, that can be powerful. Whether that can overcome a district that's heavily weighted one way or the other, though, is another matter. But certainly, what I think one thing you and I have watched all through this year is that this has been an election season like no other.
Yeah, I mean, people are engaged in a different way. I mean, you see it with the early vote. You see it with people verifying that their votes are counted. You know, people are a lot more savvy about the process now. And, you know, historic things that have worked to suppress the vote aren't working in quite the same way anymore. And I'm curious to see what difference that ultimately makes when we're counting the votes in November.
Yeah, and getting away from the local race we've been discussing, how Florida is going to shake out its electoral votes. I think that, as ever, that could be a nail-biting election night. We're just going to have to wait and see. But it's going to be intense. I think we have to prepare for that.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not expecting to sleep much on November 3rd.
Right. Right. So, now, the fact that they pre-count the early ballots in Florida, though, do you think that might mean we know the answer on election night?
I think it helps us. It puts us in a better place than a lot of places in the country. But in terms of a final certifiable result, I think if you're expecting one, unless this race starts looking like some of the more optimistic public polling for Biden, I don't think you're going to get that. And, you know, given the climate and given the back and forth already about gaming the election for various sides, you're going to see multiple lawsuits and so on. So, you know, I think it's optimistic to say you're going to be able to call the election in a way that you might have been able to say in past years.
Always great to get your insights, and thanks to everyone who called in and weighed in on social media. Quite a lively discussion, which we always like to host on this program. So, AG, thank you as always, and we'll be talking to you again on election night.
Thank you.
AG Gankarski of Florida Politics with us. And in a moment, we're going to change gears. It's fall. And are you a gardener? Or maybe you're not one. Even so, we have some fall planting tips you can do in your yard, in your field, or even on your patio from one of this area's favorite green gardeners. We'll be right back.
WJCT, Jacksonville University, and the Jacksonville Environmental Protection Board for ADAPT, the State of the St. Johns River. Experts will share their reactions and suggest next moves based on the annual river report. Join us the evening of Thursday, October 22nd. Reserve your free spot for this virtual conversation at adaptflorida.org.
Congaree and Penn, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering picnic meals in a safe, dog-friendly farm setting where social distancing is top priority. Visit congareeandpenn.com for more information.
UF Health Jacksonville, celebrating 150 years of caring for our community. Founded in 1870, UF Health Jacksonville is a major academic health center serving Northeast Florida and Southeast Georgia. Learn more at ufhealthjacks.org.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. President Trump won Iowa easily in 2016, but this year the polls are showing a real nail-biter. For some voters, the race is getting personal.
I've even got family members that have, you know, don't speak to me much anymore because of the way I feel about Trump.
We'll hear from voters in Iowa next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJTT News 89.9.
I'm Marco Werman. This year, nearly 1 million active duty military members are eligible to vote by absentee ballot. Many are first-time voters. Some retired U.S. generals and veterans know this, and they're making a demand that all military ballots be counted before the winner of the presidential election is declared. That story on The World.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
The group charged with allegedly trying to kidnap Michigan's governor also talked about taking similar action against Ralph Northam, the governor of Virginia. Armed factions are threatening to turn up in force at the polls next month. What happens if they do? We'll ask Virginia Senator Democrat Mark Warner next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, fall is planting season here in Florida, and whether you're new at gardening or an expert, a city or country dweller, there are some easy and sustainable ways you can grow your own groceries right now. I spoke about it with author and green gardening expert Ginny Stiebolt. Hi, Ginny. Good to be with you. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
And, you know, in this pandemic, I have noticed a big uptick in people expressing interest in doing their own vegetable gardens. They have a lot more time at home. They have more time on their hands. They want to grow their own groceries. You have some excellent advice about this at your website. It's Green Gardening Matters. Fall is the time we need to be doing this, right? To get into planting and planting vegetables that can take us through the winter. Let's begin with that. This is the season, isn't it?
It is. This is our best growing season. So our cool weather crops, which would be lettuces and the cold crops like cabbage and broccoli and cauliflower and beets and other cool weather vegetables, now is the time to plant. And so we can grow them right through the winter. So they can tolerate light frosts, they don't like hot weather, and so this is our best planting season. So, and they're easy to grow. Onions are grown right through the winter here, and since the onions grow through our winter, and that's what we do, we need short day onions. So sometimes you see in garden centers long day onions. Those onions will not work. So we need to pay attention to what we're doing. So those onions will grow, but they'll never bulb out. So we need to pay attention to what works. And also I think that gardening is a wonderful family project. It's educational for kids. Kids learn that their carrots don't come in a plastic bag, that they actually come from the ground.
Yeah. This is a great activity to do with the family right now. And your blog gets into sustainable gardening and the benefits of doing this sustainably, correct?
That's right. Yes, and I wrote Organic Methods for Vegetable Gardening for Florida. And we can grow almost everything without using any poisons. So that way we know from seed to table what happens to our food. And I think people are appreciating that, particularly when vegetables in the market are, you know, infected with E. coli and other things that are bad for us. If we are growing our own vegetables, they're fresh, they're more nutritious, and we get the pleasure of growing our own food. It makes our families more resilient as well, I think.
Right. As challenging as this time has been, it is forcing some changes in our habits, and this is one that I think we can all embrace. And what you know so much about is anyone can do this. Even if you don't have a big yard to put a garden in, you can do a container garden on a little balcony if you have, say, an apartment in the city. This is something that's accessible to anyone.
That's correct. So the lettuces and the Swiss chards and even carrots could grow in containers. And you don't want to put stones in the bottom of those containers. You just want soil all the way through. So there are some advice on my website about that as well. But even if you're growing in your yard, you don't have to plow the whole yard out. It's much better to do a raised bed so you have control of the soil. And if you don't have time, there are services in Jacksonville that where other people can grow vegetables in your yard. There's something called Fleet Farming. So you can go to fleetfarming.org to find the local Fleet Farming people, and they would come to your yard, grow vegetables. You get to keep some of their crop, and they keep some too.
Yeah, I love that idea. Yeah,
and sell them at farmers markets and stuff like that.
That's so great. Now, I encourage everyone to go to Ginny's website too, Green Gardening Matters, greengardeningmatters.com. She is an expert on sustainable gardening, and now is the time to do those fall plantings. So, Ginny, thanks so much for sharing your knowledge with us.
Any time, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
And happy gardening, everyone. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director here at 89.9 is Jessica Palumbo, and Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. You are the biggest part of what we do. Keep that feedback coming. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Make sure to catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock, or our podcast will be up later today. Listen anywhere. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Have a great Thursday. We'll be back tomorrow at Friday, 9 a.m. for our media roundtable. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.